Cape Talk.
Ask Dr. Josh.
All right, so our topic on Ask Dr. Josh tonight is admittedly a difficult one, but one that I think that nonetheless is deserving of our attention. The country was shocked and outraged in September when the horrific details emerged of the rape of a six-year-old girl in the bathroom of a Dross restaurant in Pretoria. 20-year-old Nicholas Ninno stands accused of the crime. Similarly, today Mortimer Saunders was found guilty on charges of rape and premeditated murder of three-year-old Courtney Peters. And overwhelmingly, the responses to crimes of this nature are why? What possesses someone to do that? And for most of us, crimes like this are completely unfathomable. Similarly, for many people, and understandably, the reaction is one of anger, revulsion, and ultimately the need for the harshest type of punishment for anyone found guilty of harming a child. But tonight we're going to be speaking to Dr. Josh about the factors that lead people to abuse children and whether there's a difference between paedophiles and child molesters. So often we simply put it down to an individual being evil or a monster, but is it more complex than that? Can people like Saunders be treated? And is everyone who is attracted to children likely to act on that attraction? As I said, it is a difficult topic and one that elicits, understandably, a great deal of emotion, but one that nonetheless I think is important to discuss. Josh, welcome. Great to have you back on the show.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So listen, Dr. Josh, when one deals with a topic as emotive as this, there will be people who question why it even matters that there's a difference between child molesters and paedophiles. There'll be people who will say that in some way we are being child abuse apologists by even discussing it or not focusing on the true victims of their crimes. So why do you think it's important that A, we take time to make the distinction, and B, that we have this conversation?
Well, because there's quite a bit of science to differentiate why this happens. And if you want to think about it just from a victim standpoint, the perpetrators are different types of people. So I'm a psychologist, but if I'm thinking about this even in a forensic way, an individual who molests a child, the profile of that individual, if I'm law enforcement, is not going to be the same if that person is or as we like to say, suffers from pedophilia versus somebody who does not suffer from pedophilia and is abusing a child. They're not the same. The urges are not the same. The rationale is not the same. The end point or the end product is still horrific in both cases. So I'm not here to tell you one is okay and one is not. But what drives it is different. And so why do we need to care? Because if we're going to stop this, we can't lump the two together and say they're all the same kind of person. And, you know, and many people do it. They're all just evil. Well, that's great, but that doesn't help those of us in either mental health or law enforcement differentiate.
So we're saying that not all people who are suffering with pedophilia are child molesters, and vice versa, not all child molesters right. are people who are paedophiles.
That's right. I mean, so if we start to sort of break it down, pedophilia is it is a psychiatric disorder, and it falls into what we call the paraphilias, and these are essentially sexual attractions that are outside the realm of normal accepted human practices.
Okay.
And so somebody who's a pedophile or has pedophilia will have an attraction to typically prepubescent children. Sometimes male, sometimes female, sometimes heterosexual, sometimes homosexual.
And that attraction, sorry, Josh, just to be clear, that attraction is a sexual attraction. It is not based on the idea of being able to overpower somebody who is inferior in a physical way or an emotional way to them. Is that right?
Yes, this is not the mindset of a rapist. This is the mindset of somebody who is sexually aroused by the sight, or sexually attracted by the sight of prepubescent children. And I'm going to say something that's going to sound very controversial, but I want to say this. Not unlike somebody who is attracted sexually, an adult who's attracted to another adult sexually. It is the same kind of thing, only the difference is that attraction is to children.
Mm-hmm.
And for many pedophiles, many, it is something that they know exists. They are ashamed of it completely. They feel as if they can't control it, but it is there. That is different than what we call a child molester, because child molestation is an act. Pedophile is a person, and pedophilia is an attraction. Molestation is an act. Pedophilia is an attraction not necessarily acted upon.
So very often, would it be right to say, and you must correct me if I'm wrong, but you will often see a headline regarding an assault that has taken place on a child, maybe a high profile case, and it will say pedophile jailed or police hunting for pedophile, when actually, if we're going to be accurate about that, it is a child molester who has been jailed. It is a child molester that police are searching for, not a pedophile. And we are condemning very often people for a condition, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but a condition or a disorder or proclivity over which they have no control, to the point where they are not acting on it. Just the condition itself does not justify the condemnation.
Exactly. And we can slice it one slice even thinner. A child molester versus a child rapist. There, again, I know these are very uncomfortable topics.
Yeah, yeah.
But very often, adults who molest children, it is a coercion, but it's not always a rape. And so you've got child molestation, you have childhood rape, and that can be done, molestation and rape can be done by someone who has pedophilia, or very often is done by somebody who doesn't have pedophilia. And in fact, most of the childhood assaults or rapes are done by individuals who don't have pedophilia, because it's done, as you said, as a aggressive power move versus sexual attraction.
Right. Yeah. Okay. If you are just joining us, the time is 12 minutes to midnight, and we are having a very difficult, but I think necessary and very open discussion with Dr. Josh tonight about predators, child sex abuse, and the difference and why it matters that we define a difference and make a distinction between child molesters and people who we would say are paedophiles or are suffering with pedophilia, which is a condition, which is a disorder. It's what was the term that you used? A paraphilia.
We call it a paraphilia, a disorder. It's basically a sexual attraction that is, for lack of a better description, a sexual attraction that is improper.
Okay.
To social norms.
Martin sent a message in and says, would a paedophile groom children, but a molester wouldn't bother with grooming and rather just act on impulse?
Sometimes. I'm sorry to be not so that. So molesters tend to be more opportunistic. A pedophile may groom. Because, again, you can go there, if your audience can go there with me, again, they're grooming because there's an attraction. They want to satisfy a sexual attraction.
Yeah.
They want to engage in this act, and so it's not a impulse. It's impulse-driven, but it is very often trying to control an impulse, but they're not able to. And so they tend not to be as opportunistic, because they're not, it doesn't just come upon them. They're thinking about it a lot. and they're trying to control it. Whereas a molester, and even the molester versus the abuser, a molester may coerce and groom the child. A child abuser may be incredibly opportunistic, and more often than not, it's somebody that the child knows.
Mm. Here's a question then for you, Josh. Is a paedophile any more likely to act out on his or her sexual compulsion than a heterosexual or homosexual person is, who is attracted to adults? Because that's the thing, isn't it? When we hear the term paedophile, yeah. there is immediately this fear. We link the term paedophile with predator and somebody whose sole aim in life is to have sex with children. Whereas the way that you're actually framing it for us and explaining it would actually suggest that that's not true. So, is a paedophilic orientation any more impulsive than my sexual impulse as a heterosexual adult female towards an adult male?
It is, for the following reason. Your or my heterosexual or homosexual attraction to another adult is socially condoned, socially accepted. Mm. When we have an impulse, we can't act upon it anytime we want, but there are more avenues for us to play out that impulse. The pedophile knows that it is far from socially acceptable, and so they are repressing. And in fact, one of the things that's brought up a lot of times, and I'm going to use some strong language, mm-hmm. there are pedophiles who the way that they essentially manage this impulse and attraction is to engage in self-pleasure, is the best way I can mm-hmm, describe it, mm-hmm. self-pleasure without ever touching a child.
Right.
They're looking at child pornography. They're using that to act out. But the reason that there's more of an impulsive nature to it is because it has to be completely repressed. Unlike you or I, where if we have a sexual impulse or there's an attraction, we can pursue it versus not being able to be pursued.
Yeah, yeah. We know, of course, that child pornography is not a victimless crime. In fact, quite the opposite. But do you think it's common for people who are dealing with being paedophiles and having this desire that, as you've said, many don't want to have, that they would see viewing child pornography or using child pornography in terms of masturbation as sort of the gate through which they won't cross? It's preventing them from acting out with a contact crime.
Yes. However, the problem there that you run into is much like pornography and masturbation. At some point,
they need a bigger stimuli.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a habituation, the term that we use. It becomes it's not the full blown contact. And let me say this: we're broad brushing this, and we're talking about this at the population level. There are some pedophiles for whom that is how they manage it. Nobody knows about them. They never makes it out into the public. They deal with that their entire life. Mm. There are some who progress on. There are some who are caught. There are also some who are predators, just like. There are individuals who will be predators towards in a heterosexual way.
Yeah.
So it is not all the same, but I guess my point is there are lines that cross. There are pedophiles who molest and rape. There are rapists who are not pedophiles. And the reason that you need to understand the difference is not only from a law enforcement how to catch them, but how to manage them. And this is one of the controversial issues. Throwing pedophiles in jail only I'm not condoning the behavior, but throwing them in jail without any sort of intervention, trying to treat, is essentially just warehousing them, which is fine until they get out.
So that leads me to my next question. The question that many people want to know is, can you treat somebody who has pedophilia?
There's a lot of debate about it. And the reason I say that is there are many interventions that are used. Most of them focus on what we sort of call cognitive behavioral type, controlling thoughts, impulses, looking for more appropriate outlets. There's use of certain drugs, of certain psychotropic medications, ones that typically focus on obsessions and compulsions. Again, to sort of tone down that, if you will, the cognitive desire. There's hormonal treatments. One of all, you know, in the past, they've done things like chemical castration.
Yeah. Now, is that, Josh, sorry to interrupt you. Is that for people who present and say, listen, I'm a pedophile, and I'm concerned that I'm going to act out, and therefore chemical castration? Or is that for that sort of that grey area, or maybe not grey area, of people who either are pedophiles and have committed a contact crime, or are child molesters and have committed a contact crime?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
Yes. So individuals will come forward and say, I can't control this. You've got to control me hormonally. Basically, make me asexual. Make me have no sexual drive at all. That is one way. Now, one of the very controversial but increasingly looked at perspectives, and again, when I say this, this is not a bunch of mental health professionals just making this stuff up sitting in their office. They're looking at research. They're evaluating individuals with pedophilia. They're looking at their behaviors and their histories, all those kinds of things. One of the things that is emerging is this idea that it's an orientation, that it is an innate orientation, right or wrong, wired right or wrong. Essentially, you're born that way.
Yeah. And
you know, that does not sit right with a lot of people. But it's something that we're finding more and more, that individuals who meet the criteria for pedophilia basically said, I've always felt this way. I've always been this way. I know it's not right. That is the other thing I want to say, is an individual has pedophilia in the majority of cases, there's some exceptions, will fully embrace that it is not socially acceptable or correct, and very often feel terribly ashamed, guilty, self-loathing, and this is partly also why they don't come forth for help, because they don't want to tell anybody that I think about children. And remember, children is typically defined as prepubescent, but it doesn't always have to be. I mean, this can be a early pubescent 12-year-old. And now you get into real gray areas. Real gray areas, because these are individuals who are children who are developing. Still not right.
But
if you're looking at the attraction, but all of that is very different than the individual who is acting out of anger, out of retribution, out of opportunity. Typically, the molester who is not a pedophile is not. They may be aroused in the moment, but they are not attracted to. It's very different.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Joshua, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you for talking us through this. It is a difficult one, and I know that it is an emotive one for people, and it's often a conversation that we would rather not have, but I think it's important that we do have it for the reasons that you've outlined for us this evening. So, as always, thanks for being such a star, and we'll chat not next week, but the week after next.
Thank you, Sarah Jane. I appreciate it.